Hello, and welcome to the Green Tea Party,
where we discuss conservative solutions to environmental problems. I'm Hannah Rogers.
My name is Zach Torpy.
And I'm Katie Zakreski. Together, we'll guide you through complex issues and provide strategies to address them.
All while remaining faithful to our conservative values.
Trust me, it'll be a good time.
Yeah, it's a party. So grab your mugs and we'll pour the tea.
So Zach, I heard you were talking to Katie about something scientifically fascinating today.
A little scientific, a little religious. There is the coming birth of Stingray Jesus.
Oh, wow.
Wait, Stingray Jesus?
This Lenten season is full of surprises.
Yes. So there's a stingray that is pregnant. It has never had a male stingray in its habitat. It was expected to give birth to like 2 to 4 stingray babies. So numerous stingray Jesuses.
Oh, interesting. All right. Yeah, I just Googled, I Googled pregnant stingray and like the internet was like, we got you, fam. Stingray babies are called pups. I think that is so cute. The pregnant stingray in question is named Charlotte and has never shared her tank with a male stingray partner. And there are apparently 2 leading theories on this virgin pregnancy. And the first one is somebody was like, oh, well, she's got 2 male bamboo sharks that were her tank mates. And then everybody else was like, I doubt cross species breeding is what is happening here.
I mean, you never know.
Yeah,
but I doubt it as well.
So today's word of the day, listeners, is parthenogenesis. And I could only say that because me, Zach, and Hannah have been sitting here for about 30 minutes trying to break down that word phonetically. The second theory is that the stingray is pregnant because of a rare biological process known as parthenogenesis, where an egg splits and develops into a full embryo asexually without the need for fertilization. So this is apparently super rare. Yeah, and so she's expected. Yeah, she's expected to give birth any day now. I'm hoping that by the time this comes out, we have the good ending. Because if this comes out and something bad has happened, boy, am I going to be upset. So here's me speaking into the universe that Charlotte, the miraculously pregnant stingray, will give birth to 4 very healthy pups. That is my Super Bowl prediction. And apparently this also can happen, like this parthenogenesis can also happen in zebra sharks and geckos and spiders and Komodo dragons, so... If you get too stressed, I guess we'll just have a baby. So don't be stressed. I guess.
Could you imagine like being a virgin and finding out you're pregnant?
That was just like my childhood phobia. Like as somebody who grew up in a real devout Catholic family, I was like, man, what if I'm pregnant at 10? And I was like, okay, maybe not. Maybe we need to calm down for a minute.
I'm a second Mary.
Yeah, that couldn't be me, man. I can barely keep my plants watered. I do not need to be the vehicle for the next Messiah. That is not me.
I mean, could you imagine the weight of that responsibility, like being the mother of the next Messiah, let alone the next stingray Messiah? Like, I don't know.
A pretty big
savior
deal.
Of all the race.
I'll be so this Lenten season, we've witnessed our very own miracle at the aquarium and shark lab.
What
is this? Where is Charlotte the stingray? That is what I want to know.
I cannot believe this.
All right, so Charlotte the stingray is from North Carolina, and ironically, just one state over, Zach, Nikki Haley did not do too well in her home state. You wanna? We talked a little bit about
Nikki.
That. You wanna? Yeah, that was just. Go ahead, take the floor, Zach.
Imagine losing a popularity contest in your own home state to... Oh.
Lord. Man, I think I'd retire after that. I think I'd be like,
You know, I want her to keep going, actually.
Yeah, I want her to keep going so there's a second option. But if it was me personally, I really think I'd change my name and, like, move to Antarctica and...
Oh, she already changed her name.
That's true. True.
I'm tired of having the same Republican candidate, Donald Trump. We want to have a Republican presidency we need to have some fresher voices out there and some younger voices, you know? I'm kind of just tired of his, no offense, but bullshit is what I would say. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
I'm just going to vote for Charlotte the Stingray. I'm going to vote for Charlotte.
Charlotte the Stingray for presidency.
Yeah, everybody said it wasn't possible, but God did. So thank you, God did. Charlotte the Stingray. We don't know what your platform is, but got to be better than what we're working with. So Charlotte 2024.
Speaking of strong executives, this is the last part of our series on authoritarianism and climate change. So to paint a final picture, let's imagine the most environmentally friendly dictator you can possibly think of. Like, what are some things that this dictator does that makes him environmentally conscious? And how is he a dictator?
Roll out renewable energy through executive power.
Yeah, rolls out rules by decree on environmental things. Like, do you think, what would it be like as a citizen to be living underneath an environmentally autocratic government, if that makes sense?
Well, maybe I'm putting the cart before the horse, but my knee-jerk reaction was, oh, he would force us to do clean, environmentally friendly things. And I was like, oh, wait, man, if we gotta be forced to do something by government, that's not very conservative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What about, like, how real do you think that those environmental promises would be? Like, do you think that, you know, if like, say, Vladimir Putin came out and said, you know what, I'm going to change all of Russia to be climate and environmentally conscious, would you believe that he was actually going to do that?
Or no,
would
you think? No. Exactly. Isn't that like China here a couple months ago were like, hey, we just released this internal study that shows we're super duper clean energy. Nobody was like, yeah, right. Let me see if I can find it. I swear I read about this somewhere. China report.
Yeah. The CCP is a classic example of not a failed authoritarian government, but a failed environmental one, if that makes sense.
You're good. Yeah, no, okay. So maybe I'm like, maybe I got my tinfoil hat on a little bit, but I found a couple like clean energy sites that were like, man, yeah, clean energy contributed this much to China's economy and in 2023. Isn't that amazing? Are we really going to trust those self-reported numbers, gang? Like, I mean, not to wear the tinfoil hat too bad, but like, come on.
I mean,
come on.
I would trust it a little bit just because I feel like China doesn't care what the rest of the world thinks about their pollution. And they are producing all of the solar panels for like the rest of the world. Like the U.S. is the only place that really makes our own solar panels now because we're investing so much in it. But China supplies 80% of the world's solar panels.
That's true, but I do think about just a couple years ago when they were like, what? No, COVID's done here, and like half the country had been wiped out from COVID and was still like suffering from it. So just a couple years ago, they were fudging report numbers. So yeah. I think that while this is different because they are manufacturing things, I think you're right about that, Zach. I still have to wonder, you know, even if they're making a bunch of solar panels and EVs and batteries, like, what are they doing, like, in, like domestically to clean up their own air pollution, their own water quality, their own, like, spills and things going on over there? Like, I think it's very much like, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
It's definitely take everything you hear from on China with a large grain of salt. And
true. Yeah.
One thing that I like to bring up is because in response to liberals, I hear liberals all the time be like, oh man, we just need a bigger government to solve this problem. It's like, I don't know, like bigger government, does, I've said this over and over again, has generally, at least in my opinion and in my research, had a pretty bad environmental track record. And one of the most famous environmentalists who were authoritarians were the Nazis. And they cared, you know, exactly.
Oh God.
And I definitely don't think starting a land war in Europe and committing genocide against a religious minority is considered environmentally responsible, right?
And that whole world war thing and all that stuff.
Oh my gosh. But you know what the Nazi Party did, the SS did, especially Goebbels, who was the propaganda minister for the Nazi Party, is they used environmentalism to justify doing atrocious things, if that makes sense. Like, they used environmentalism to justify taking over Poland because they believed that Poland wasn't as environmentally responsible as the Nazis were, right? And so In my opinion, if you want a larger government to handle environmental problems, you're giving the government a ticket to say, all right, we can do whatever we want, a license to do whatever we want in the name of environmentalism. And I mean, you see this with corporations all the time. They greenwash their products to make their products seem more ethical so that people are going to buy into them. I mean, that's exactly what so many authoritarian regimes do, is they greenwash their own regimes and say, well, you know, we deserve to be in power because we're environmentally responsible. I don't know if you guys have any examples coming to mind of authoritarian environmental greenwashing.
This is maybe not so much an example of that, but I think proof that we've got little people living inside of our technology that listen to every word we say. I was scrolling through Reddit, you know, as you do, after we recorded our last episode, and it gave me a post that it thought I would be interested in from r/unpopular opinion, and somebody posted it and said, I would be okay with an environmental dictator who prohibited any freedom to pollute. And this person like goes through their posts where they're like, yeah, I'd be happy if the dictator rose to power and was like really diehard about environmentalism, and he would like seize the lands of the rich and turn them into public parks and outlaw gasoline cars and replace them with EVs and impose a carbon tax and regulate the earth. And every comment, no matter where they are on the political grid, is like, no, bad idea, bad idea. And the top comment is, OP seems to fundamentally misunderstand the causes and solutions to pollution. And I think that that is a pretty good summary in response to, if you're a dictator, you don't care about what anybody else is saying in the first place. Mm-hmm, I doubt you're going to care about how much litter is around. So, I think that anytime I hear people use this big government and or dictator excuse, they're like, oh, well, they would just want the best for it. Man, no, they would not. Shut up. You know they would not. If they want to control you, they do not want what is best for you, okay?
Exactly. Very few people who lived under the USSR or, you know, under any sort of authoritarian government would say, yeah, you know, I had a pretty good high-quality standard of living when I was...
Yeah, man, the gulags, they were the best, dude. It was just a big fraternity.
It was a party all the time. And truly, the only people who are enjoying life under an authoritarian regime are the autocrats themselves, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. And even they aren't having that much fun.
Yes, Zach.
Yes, the inner circle. Exactly. And so, and the wealth inequality in these authoritarian regimes is just egregious because the state is owning the majority of the economy, which, I mean, could you imagine that happening in the United States? Oh my gosh. Mm. And there's no innovation, you know. The economy is basically at this huge standstill. And so another thing is, if you are just worried about getting your basic needs met, I don't know if any of you guys have ever really been broke before. I have. I've been so broke before. While I was living in DC, I was considering going on food stamps because I didn't have enough money to survive there. It was so bad. I will tell you, when I'm really broke, the last thing that I'm thinking about is, oh my gosh, am I being an environmentally responsible citizen? You know, I'm like, okay, I need a Hot Pocket. I need anything that I can find.
Yeah, you know, I'm so glad you said that, because this is a point that I think I've reiterated until I'm absolutely blue in the face. I came from a really low income background in an inner city neighborhood in the rural South. I'm talking like, stand outside in the front yard and ask the utility guy to give you 2 more days to pay the light bill. Poor. When you are that broke, you're not thinking, oh my gosh, yes, I would love to spend $3 more so that I can get this recyclable item instead of this plastic packaging. Oh my goodness. Yes, I absolutely can spare $5 more to... No. I think that the problem with this is that we need to commodify being environmentally friendly and eco-friendly in a way that literally anybody can participate in it. Because the way that the economy is right now, dude, milk is $8 to $10 a gallon. People do not have the money to choose environmentally sound options right now. And quite frankly, I don't blame them. Like, I can't blame them. Like, you can find another way to make that up, whether that's by cleaning the area around you or doing like organizing a pickup, something like that that's free. But I think that that is where this kind of falls in with this big government, this dictatorship overreach. When you have a lot of dictatorships and things like that, your economy is really, really bad. And not only does that indicate that you as a dictator do not care about the environment, but you are economically crippling your people into not being able to care about the environment either. They just cannot afford it.
That's a great point, Katie, where it's really is caring about the environment is a more middle and upper class like privilege. Like, we are privileged enough to have this as a worry versus mm-hmm. other people who are just worried about feeding their families. Absolutely. And getting by.
Yeah. Yeah. So many other people are worried about keeping the lights on, getting clothes, eating 3 square meals a day, living paycheck to paycheck, to the point where when everybody had their little Stanley Cup phase, I was like, dude, some of us are literally just trying to keep the lights on right now. So, like, some of us are literally just trying to eat 3 square meals a day right now. We do not have the time to go out and buy the latest TikTok sensationalized, renewable, reusable, whatever that everybody is buying right now. Like, some of us literally do not have the privilege. And this is where I think conservatives have the biggest opportunity to mm-hmm. find a voice here at the climate table. Dude, like it or not, conservatives have the track record of being financially savvy. And a lot of conservatives, you know, they've been painted by the media as being these rich fat cats in the upper echelons. And you know what? Maybe some of them are. But a majority of conservatives that I know are low income and blue collar. And I think that if we mm-hmm. bring conservatives to the table to talk climate, they're going to find a way to make environmentally friendly options widely affordable and widely feasible to people outside of the six-figure a year folks.
Yeah. And, you know, authoritarian regimes take, you know, millions of people from those comfortable positions in society and then plunges them into utter poverty, right? Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. my family, they come from Germany and they fled during World War II and they fled to the United States. The only way they were able to make it to the United States was off of selling a butterfly collection that they have. Oh, it was wow. actually still at a university in Berlin. So, but wow. like, that's how desperate they were. They went out and collected butterflies and then sold it to a university. I think about those people who went from, you know, middle class to immediately into like just egregious poverty to where they had to like collect butterflies and sell this butterfly collection in order to get a ticket out of Germany. But like, imagine, you know, already being poor. You know, like already being poor. And then this authoritarian regime comes along and, you know, starts taking your wealth away from you even more, even if you had very little to start with. And one of the biggest reasons why I care about climate change is because climate change exacerbates existing inequalities like wealth inequality. But people who are already poor and desperate, you know, and are experiencing these consequences of climate change, like, you know, people who pick our food and are out there in the heat every single day are starting to experiencing more and more days of extreme heat. Like, it's these compounding things that just puts people into these cycles of poverty, and climate change exacerbates that. And so does a large government, you know?
Mm-hmm. And we talk so much about, especially here in America, how mm-hmm. when you think of American, like, and I mean American, you think of the farmer. I mean, you don't get rich being a farmer, but you're providing food for your whole community and for your whole country. And these are the groups that, you know, you're not going to get rich from being a farmer, like I said, but these are also the occupations and the lifestyles that, like you said, Hannah, they're going to be most drastically impacted by climate change. I know even in my own family, where I have family members who immigrated from Russia and Poland in the 1940s, 1930s, 1920s, 1910s, who came over here, had nothing, started farming, were able to build a sustainable life for themselves through farming. Well, 3 or 4 generations later, they're getting ready to shut down any farming that they do because the flooding and then the drought and then the flooding and then the drought is so severe and unpredictable that you've got people who have had to start over several times within just a few generations, and they're having to do it all over again. So it's either a dictator or it's climate change or it's both.
Climate change is a crisis, right? And I'm really scared that people are going to start feeling more and more okay with the government saying what we can and can't do, right? Like, if people are worried about where they're going to get their food or where they're going to get free clean water and how they're going to stay cool in the summertime, and they start turning to the government for that, because I am certain, having worked in the Senate, that there are plenty of people that do that kind of stuff, is when they have a crisis, they call the government up and, you know, try to get help. I just don't think the government belongs there. I just truly do not believe that the government should be making the decisions about the environment for us. People forget that the government is just a contract that we've all agreed to be a part of. They just turn to that contract over and over again instead of engaging in their community space, having these actual social connections and these community spaces that can make a difference from you.
A real fear I would have is the government coming in and telling people that they're doing it wrong, like coming into like farmers and being like, you're farming wrong. We're going to take your farm now and we're going to control how this is done. Taking away from people who aren't already not well off and then doing it worse than those people would have done it by themselves, exacerbating an already worsening issue.
Related to that, I feel like the climate movement could learn several valuable lessons from the way that the government handled the COVID-19 pandemic. And what I mean by that is, I wish that the government had been like, here are a list of things that you can choose to do, any and all of these that you can do to help your community, your family, the people around you. You can get the vaccine if you'd like to get the vaccine. You can mask if you'd like to mask. You can stay at home if you'd like to stay at home. If you would like to go on unemployment for now to stay at home, you can do that. But what the government did was, you've got this one option. You got to get this vaccine with only like a 60% efficiency rate. And if you don't get it, you're going to lose your job. You're going to lose your house. You're going to lose your family and your car and your home. Like, I went from being like an essential worker to being like, if you don't get this vaccine, we're firing you, like in 6 months. Like, man, I must be real essential if that's the option that I have.
Yes.
But it's not like I was going out like licking every doorknob, coughing on everybody, but because I didn't want to get like 6 different Pfizer vaccines that I was a little bit hesitant about. Okay, well, now I'm the scourge of the earth and I got to lose my job. But if they had given me like, hey, if you're not comfortable with the vaccine yet, which, why not? We came up with it in 2 weeks, but we still don't have a cure for cancer. I wish that there had been a range of options instead of just, you will do this because we told you to. And that's why what I wish that the government would like really emphasize with fighting climate change, that any of these solutions are better than throwing your car battery into the ocean. Like, you don't want an EV? That's fine. Go outside and pick up the trash off the sidewalk. Like, you don't want to buy 10,000 solar panels? Okay, don't leave the water running for 30 minutes as you go around outside going about. There should be a scale of, here are some things that you, or even like a point system, something like that, where like, if you like, each item is like a certain amount of points, and I don't know, like, not my job to come up with these things, but I feel like any of these things would be better than, you're going to do this thing, and if you don't, because we said so, we're going to punish you and take away your livelihood. Like, I feel like, like that for me, I don't want any of what you're promoting if the alternative is losing my livelihood.
The best environmental solutions do not come from the top. They do not come from the elites. They do not come from the government. They come from people. They come from you and me. And I cannot say this over and over again. If car-centric and car-dependent societies caused climate change, it is a really huge contributor of climate change. Why are we building electric cars? I mean, yeah, it makes sense. And I think that the government, you know, is kind of getting into a little bit of a, I want to say collusion, tinfoil hat on, with electric car manufacturers. Why don't we just have public transportation? Why don't we just have walkable cities? Instead, we're building more and more electric car factories, and electric cars aren't even that good for the environment. They're still, so I just say this over and over again. It's just like, come on, guys, let's not listen to these elite people who have no connection to the average person about climate change. They're doing the exact same thing that authoritarian regimes do, which is to try to justify the amount of wealth and power they have by greenwashing themselves. I mean, Bill Gates has emerged as this like climate fox who's always talking about climate change and always making it his thing. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's disingenuous.
Well, you know? And I don't want to hear from somebody who rides around in his private jet about climate change and the economy. Like, I like, can it, bro? I don't want to hear it.
If you're going to do that, at least practice what you preach, because we know for sure that he's not doing that. You can't be like, oh, I care so much about the planet. Look to me to care about the planet and then set a really, really crappy example.
In my opinion, the key to environmentalism is the individualistic mindset of it, because you can put up solar panels, you can have those set up and get your own energy. And like, those are cheap to put up. They're cheap to purchase if you're not dealing with like having installers come and do it. If like this was like a top skill, putting up solar panels is really cheap. The solar panels are very cheap to purchase individually. It's just the installing them is the high cost. Nations and countries where they have like low labor costs and they're just trying to get energy just to survive, like in Africa along the Sahel, they're installing solar panels and getting independence from their government and from the rest of the community and being able to be self-sufficient, that they can farm and have their own energy and they could pump water with that energy. Finding ways to be self-sufficient and getting away from the centralized power or the controlling power of money and government.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree with you. Be really cautious about, you know, making sure that the efforts that you're making come from you and come from within and come from people you love and people you know. Don't listen to the climate shaming. Don't listen to the environmental shaming. Like, that stuff is not helpful. It's toxic and it's very counterproductive. It's a waste of time to be doing those kinds of things. So,
and I think learn to question the messenger too, Hannah. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
like
absolutely.
if the person who's touting this idea has zero similar lived experience to you, I mean, if their mom and dad just gave them everything and they've just hit the lottery in terms of luck and not like, you know, just being, I'm going to say it, privileged, their way of doing things is probably not going to be your way of doing things, because I cannot go ask my mom and dad for a loan or anything like that. Like, dude, if I'm the one paying for everything, no, I'm not going to be doing stupid stuff to tell everybody that I'm environmentally friendly. So I think that you need to understand if your messenger comes from a similar lived experience as you, okay, yeah, that's empowering because that means you can do it. But if the messenger has always had more than you, has always lived lavishly, has always, you know, white collar rubbing elbows with important people, dude, nah, there's got to be a better way.
Okay, I think we probably got to wrap this up a little bit.
Right? Yeah, I think we beat this one to death. Sorry, Yang.
Wow, I feel like I got really fired up there for a second.
Yeah, that was like therapy for me. I got a lot off my chest.
Wow, my heart is beating so fast. Let's move into the closing. So, Katie, what would you and Zach, what do you guys think about, you know, what the takeaways for this episode should be? Like, what are like one or two things that you think are like the principles from this episode that our listeners should take away?
Honestly, I've got two recommendations from me. First one is, start researching candidates that you think align pretty closely with your point of views for this election season. And I'm not just talking presidential. I'm talking, look at your district, your city council, folks running for judge, folks running for alderman, school board, things like that. Start identifying some of those folks right now that you would like to vote for, or that you agree with, or that you could help with their campaign somehow, because I think we take for granted just what a privilege it is to be able to not only pick a candidate that you agree with, but have the ability to go out and knock doors, hand out flyers, call folks, and support the person that you like. I think we take that for granted. That's my first takeaway from this episode. My second is contact your member of Congress. Young people, I know you hate making phone calls. Good thing you can email them. Email them if you're not comfortable calling, but do keep in mind that when you call, it's not like Senator Bozeman is sitting there behind the phone just waiting on it to ring. You're going to talk to somebody in the office. They're going to answer the phone. It occurred to me a lot of people don't really know what happens when you call your member of Congress. Let me very briefly tell you. When you call your member of Congress's office, they usually, somebody like Hannah will answer the phone.
I've answered many of your calls.
Yeah, and it's not as scary as you think it is. You just say, hey, my name is so-and-so. I'm a constituent of Senator or Congressman so-and-so. And I just wanted to leave a comment about the Prove It Act or the Rise Act or climate change. And then tell them a little bit about what it is that you're feeling and what you're thinking. Don't take up all their time.
And you're welcome to.
Yeah, you're welcome to. They're not allowed to hang up. So, I mean, make the shift worthwhile. Just don't be nasty. But genuinely, give your member of Congress your opinion. Let them know, you know, I'm a young conservative from your district, and I think that it's important that you know how young conservatives feel about this topic, especially with it being an election year, and tell them your opinion. That's what they're there for. If they're going to make $175,000 a year, you better make sure that you get your money's worth.
Even though I was, like, earlier saying, oh, don't go to the government for everything. You better go to the government to represent yourself, at least, you know?
Don't let them wonder what you're thinking, man. Like, let them know.
Zach, what are we going to say as your takeaways?
My takeaway is understanding news literacy and where you're getting your information from, and understanding the bias of that source and how that is affecting your opinion. And make sure you get out of your own bubble and do your own research. Find information that contradicts your current opinion and understand where that comes from and where the numbers are coming from and how to like square that and understand the full circle of. And just don't believe everything that famous people say, and they are not the arbiters of truth. Like, science is the arbiter of truth, and that will determine what is accurate, not some random famous person on TikTok or wherever saying whatever they want, where truth is social.
Biggest takeaway is I am so grateful to be an American. I am so grateful to live in this nation, because there are places in the world where people have no idea that you can knock doors for someone's campaign, that you can run for office. That is not even in like their cultural. So take advantage of that. Please do take advantage of that. Then second of all these elites who are telling you what to do about the environment, you can't be an elite and be an environmentalist. Those things are mutually exclusive. So what you got to do is you got to take care of yourself, take care of the people around you, do what you can for the environment, do what feels comfortable for you, whatever that is, if that's composting, taking the bus, whatever that is, it is enough that you've done that. Don't let these people shame you. Don't let these people make you feel coerced into doing anything. They don't have your interest in mind. They don't know what it's like to be you. That's okay. Do what you can, right? So for you, our listener, please email us with your thoughts. Our email is info@greenteapartyradio.com. And thank you so much for listening to Green Tea Party Radio. And a very special thanks to all of you who are patrons for us. We could not do this without you.
If you're interested in getting early access to episodes as well as Green Tea Party Radio merch, check us out at greenteapartyradio.com. If you have feedback, tell us what's on your mind, and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. But don't get your news from there.
Don't get your news from there.
Great advice. And just so you know, this is our passion project. We don't have any organizational sponsor. Additionally, Green Tea Party Radio is not representative of the Diocese of Little Rock, Catholic Climate Covenant, or any of our employers. We're just a bunch of young conservatives who are really, really passionate about this topic. And we're building a movement because we want the world to know that conservatives have important things to say about climate change.
Amen. Amen.
And if you want to hear our show on your college radio station, email us at info@greenteapartyradio.com. And give us the details about your campus and your radio station. The email again is info@greenteapartyradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, everybody. And definitely chatted your ears off on this one. So thank you for listening to all three parts.
'm Chelsea Henderson, host of the Eco Right Speaks podcast. In a world where conservative voices rarely meet environmental discussions, Green Tea Party Radio is a breath of fresh air. With your hosts, Hannah, Zach, and Katie, get ready for insightful dialogues that break the mold.
As conservatives, we're passionate about the environment, the free market, and our faith.
But finding our place in this conversation isn't always easy, and that's why we're here.
Join us every week as we explore how conservative values intersect with tackling climate change, promoting energy independence, and creating new clean energy sector jobs.
Green Tea Party Radio is more than a show. It's a movement that connects young American conservatives aged 16 to 25.
We're not just discussing problems, we're providing solutions.
So if you're tired of the same old narratives, it's time to embrace something different.
Pour the tea, ignite the conversation, and join us on a journey of discovery and action.
Don't miss Green Tea Party Radio, coming soon to a college radio station near you. Or subscribe to the Green Tea Party Radio podcast. Check out the Green Tea Party Radio Patreon group for early access, special content, merch, and more. Visit greenteapartyradio.com. Together, let's reshape the future.
Woohoo!